South Africa is alive with possibilities. I mean, who would have imagined a former president in jail, a sitting president sleeping on cash, literally, a cabinet minister visiting a common prisoner in jail, or even the post office operating even when they have nothing to do?
Can you confirm that delivery performance has dropped?
Welcome to the new Sowetan Live podcast called Taking the Rams by the Horns with me, Rams Mabote. Each week, I will be taking a lighter look at very serious topics that half the time drive you up the wall. This podcast will use humor to take no prisoners, have no holy cows, and cook a whole lot of sacrificial lambs. Welcome to Taking the Rams by the Horns, a podcast that takes current affairs out of current affairs. This is an award-winning podcast in partnership with Sowetan Live. I'm your host, Rams Mabote. Donald J. Trump is a gift that continues giving.
And so America is, at this hour, completing the 52nd day of having a president of the United States whose brain does not work. Donald Trump's brain is broken.
If, like me, you're in the business of content creation, you are spoiled for choice, thanks to the U.S. president. But in fairness, so is South Africa. We don't seem to know how to get ourselves out of the jam. Last month, the U.S. sent former South African ambassador to Washington, Ibrahim Rasool Peking, after he was recorded criticizing Trump's style of governance.
Do you think that the U.S. President Donald Trump is a white supremacist? That is what the administration says you said.
I think that there are signs of supremacism that are clearly there. It's being exported around the world. And I think picking on South Africa, particularly on people of other colors, other religions and so forth, begins to say that maybe if it begins to smell like it, look like it, and they react to it, then maybe we are seeing the signs.
This sent us into a diplomatic spin, as such a thing does not happen as often as a politician being caught with their hands in the cookie jar. President Cyril Ramaphosa, who is known to suffer from regular shocks, was super shocked by Rasool's expulsion that he has done nothing about this until earlier this week, that is, when he announced former Deputy Minister of Finance, Mkhwebisi Jonas, as his special envoy to the USA to keep the home fires burning while Ramaphosa still searches for Rasool's replacement. The announcement of Jonas's appointment has been widely received as a great one in many quarters. A former deputy cabinet minister who is popular for standing up to Jacob Zuma, a whistleblower who reportedly turned down 600 million rand in refuse bags, a politician turned businessman sitting on several corporate boards and spending his time making public appearances. Except now, another recording has surfaced showing Jonas himself are taking Trump.
Right now, the U.S. is undergoing a watershed moment with Biden the certain winner in the presidential race against the racist, homophobe Donald Trump. How we got to a situation where a narcissistic right-winger took charge of the world's greatest economic and military powerhouse is something that we need to ponder over.
Before he can keep the home fires burning, it appears Jonas has actually burned down the house that Rasool vacated last month. Talk about falling into the belly of the whale in a space of 3 days. This is a stuff-up of biblical proportions. Or is it? One of the people who was happy with Jonas's appointment was Tebo Hawkhouse, chairman of Public Interest SA. Yet, in his statement earlier this week, Cass added, and I quote, "We recognize, however, that no special envoy, regardless of their ability or dedication, can resolve these challenges alone. Diplomatic success will rely on the goodwill, mutual respect, and shared commitment of both governments to address matters of concern through principled dialogue and cooperation. In this context, we reaffirm the importance of South Africa's sovereignty, the primacy of the rule of law, and the preservation of national dignity in all international engagements. Close quotes. What exactly does he mean? Well, in the public's interest, I have invited Tebo Kass to be my guest this week to talk about where we find ourselves with the US. Even if this may not be in the public's interest, you have to agree that at the very least, whoever we send to the US by any other title and with whatever previous pronouncements on tape, it is interesting to the public. Hey, Tebza, who's it?
No, Moja. What's with Dolly and yourself?
Yes, double Dolly, once again.
Itara.
So just when you thought your problems at Sundance were enough, now this residual last matter comes up and there's another new controversy.
Now, in fact, for us, we really took that on the chin. I mean, that's why I never even made mention of any foul play or whatever it is, because it's part of the game. Sometimes you benefit, sometimes you don't.
As Pizzo once said.
And if it happens on the other end, you just accept it or not. Look, that's how it is. Because until such time that we get it right, when I say we, I'm talking about SAFA, get it right, VAR, even though VAR, Leona can still be susceptible.
He still gets it wrong from time to time, right?
Yeah. So, and well, quite honestly, I'm happy for Chiefs, and I'm happy that it's going to be, they're going to get a chance to at least get something on the lento, and especially because we also needed somebody other than Stellenbosch to go to CAF also next year. So yes, it will be a good, you know, Chiefs, Pirates, and Sundowns go there, because many people, accept it. People do ask about Chiefs anyway, because they know Chiefs, Pirates.
It's a big brand. But let's get to our issue, never about football. You know, I read your statement, and I couldn't make out whether you agree with Mdlebisi Jonase's appointment or you're just acknowledging it. You sounded like you did not want to offend Donald Trump in your statement.
No, Donald Trump is far from my thoughts at all, because, in fact, I'll be very diplomatic because we are in polite conversation, but I would have used something that's got to do with the blowing air of a president. But be that as it may, we do are behind the appointment of Mdlebisi Jonase, and we believe that he's a good choice. Not that any other person would have been any better or worse, because
but what makes him a good choice?
Yeah, assuming that we're dealing with somebody who's rational. First of all, personally, from an integrity point of view, he's somebody who holds gravitas, who is able to speak truth to power, who's able to discern right from wrong, who's demonstrated that. I won't mention the State Capture Commission testimony and all that, but who's somebody who'll be able to stand firm and be able to say, yes, this would work or this won't work, especially when it comes to the rule of law. He's going to be challenged by the likes of Elon Musk or his sycophants to try and bend the rules to accommodate them, just like they've weighed in Golisotho and get them to get signed up there. And we need somebody who will say, no, there are rules. If we have to engage, let's engage on the basis of the rules that we have. And let us make sure that we don't bend the rules to fit a particular entity or politician, because rules must be able to survive a political administration. Trump will be gone in 4 years, but be as a policy of government, will need to ensure and shouldn't be that it depends on whose whims are we following. So on that score alone, I believe it's a good choice. And secondly, he's somebody who's proven himself to be able to operate at that level. When I say at that level, as a former minister, deputy minister of finance, he's somebody who understands what it is to engage at that level, at that political level. But quite honestly, Rams, it really does not matter. Even if you had taken Pope St. John, whatever it is, St. Paul or St. Benedict, and send them to Washington on our behalf, they will still not be guaranteed a good reception by Trump, who works on his whims. You just have, you, People say it's transactional. I'm not sure if it's really transactional, because a transaction suggests that you give and take. Maybe we expect a give and take relationship. We'll call it that because we only must give and you must take, and you won't give anything in return. He doesn't give a flipping anything to anybody but himself.
Before you get to that detail, I was thinking to myself, I was asking myself, would you really trust a guy who turned down a 600 million rand bribe? I mean, it's okay not to be corrupt, but I think it's delusional to reject such an offer.
You know, Khatwe, a soft pill, what can this Chinese proverb bearing, you know, this a good conscience makes for a good soft pillow, because
it is
somebody who reject such an offer, you know, as it has been reported, of such wealth, tends to tell us when he gets to the US, he wouldn't be susceptible to being given something on the side to say, look, push this policy or push this narrative, and then you'll be set for life somewhere in the Bahamas. We'll put something somewhere in escrow, give you some Trump coins and all this. So we know that insofar as that is concerned, he's not somebody who's hungry, who'd want to go there and benefit himself or his friends. So
maybe that's a form of delusional itself, right? I mean, there must be some delusion if they offer that big for whatever else.
The Guptas haven't come back to push back anyway, but to the extent that stands, I'll go with it.
So why are our relations with the US in the public interest, if you'll pardon the pun? I mean, nobody checks our relations with Kazakhstan. You know, I'm sure our ambassador there could make a sex tape and nobody cares.
Yeah, the US is the biggest trade partner that we have in South Africa. I think China is second to the US, if collection serves me well. So it is important to keep those relations and to ensure that those markets, from an economic and commercial perspective, those markets remain in place and nurtured and even cultivated to grow even stronger. So to the extent that that is the case, it is important that we engage the US in that regard. And secondly, it is important equally from a standpoint of having those relationships which balances the East and the West to ensure that we keep channels open on both ends. We don't choose one over the other, which will give credence to this non-aligned mantra that we claim as foreign policy. So it is on that score, it is equally important. But also we cannot dismiss the importance of the economic benefits insofar as unemployment is concerned, because the goods that we sell to the US, especially from a farming or agricultural sector, account for a significant amount of employment, which must be preserved. Because if we are to run away from it, chances are we're going to have, now it's sitting at over 40%, maybe we'll probably be doing it another 50 or wrong. I don't know what the percentage of the employment. And certainly we need it from that perspective, because there's no guarantee that we'll have a substitute for the products that we sell, not only agricultural, but also the cars that we also export to the US. But having said all that, we should not be going to the US with a begging bowl begging cap in hand, which is why it's important again to have somebody like Jonas involved, because
now he's been found to have said wrong things about Trump. Right? Is that going to add more salt to injury? We have enough problems.
People have said worse things about Trump, and they are actually in his cabinet. Some of them are ministers, the state secretary. Some of them are defense ministers. Some of them are his vice president.
Yeah, some of them are his ambassador designate to South Africa. I've been hearing that. Least from my friend Reedy, who's pointed out about all these friends of Trump. But, you know, those suggestions almost say that, no, don't worry. What Jonas said was just a Sunday school picnic. But I hear you when you say that. My fear is that we can't equate ourselves to Trump's chosen people. I mean, I think he deliberately chose these guys because, you know, as they say, keep your friends close and keep your enemies even closer.
I don't think he chose them. He made sure that they belong to him. He owns them. You know, he didn't just choose them.
I agree. He owns them. I agree with you.
So there's leverage that he holds over those people. So, and I don't think somebody with like a Marco Rubio really goes back to sleep at night and look himself in the mirror and say, well, I'm doing right. He maybe does, but certainly after this term, we'll probably look back and have regrets. But be that as it may, yes, he has made a decision to keep those people close to him because he uses that as leverage to say, by the way, I'm doing you a favor by keeping you here. Remember what you said about me. Remember what you said or what you did, you know. So better be careful. Just like you remember the current incident where involving the military armament advisors and the defense secretary, where the under normal circumstances those people should have been fired. At least two of them should have been gone. But have them because then he'll use it as leverage to be able to make sure that they do his bidding because he's got something on them. So the same I would imagine with the same vein I would use on Rubio and others.
So, you know, I mean, Trump is on the record for saying many years ago that the Republicans are idiots, you know. Clearly, now he's showing that they are and he's using them for his, you know, his picnic, really.
No, make no mistake. I mean, his presidency has been long percolating in the making from the late 90s, and he's been dismissed as the two party. He realizes that the Republican are most likely the easiest grouping to actually sell these lies to. I don't think he would have succeeded with the Democrats, but insofar as the Republicans is concerned, they seem to be consuming everything that he serves them. And I mean, he's the gospel according to St. Trump, insofar as the Republican MAGA outfit is concerned. And so he basically made sure that the Republican Party is no more. It's no more the Republican Party as we knew, the Republican Party of the Bushes and the Reagans. And now it is a MAGA, and they know that very well. And if you could have somebody like former Speaker of Mitch McConnell was the leader of the Senate for the Republicans. Mm-hmm. If you get people such as him somersault in the manner that they have done, and I'm talking about many other people. You can see that he's got them by the
That thing that we can see here.
Yeah. Yes.
So in all, are you saying that Cyril should not withdraw Jonas?
No. Let me tell you. First of all, I actually laugh that Jonas actually even availed himself. Because let us assume you put him aside. You put somebody as the names have been bandied about. You have somebody like Phumzile Mlambo-Ngcuka, who's got all the credentials, and you know, I see somebody. I think I also saw your comment or somebody comment about the credentials and don't mean nothing at Trump's consent. Absolutely, want to be taken to the White House to be ridiculed by Trump. We'll reduce it to a schoolboy or a schoolgirl. And admonish you in front of and made fun of you for, you know, it's like it's a pay-per-view type of thing. You wouldn't. No sane person would want that. And for me, for Jonas to avail himself of it, it shows that it takes courage and it takes a lot of self-sacrifice because there's a chance that he might have meetings arranged and nobody pitches in the White House and then being escorted to the to his waiting limousine, just as he's done with Zelensky, whom he canceled the lunch after Zelensky pushed back Oval Office. So, you ask yourself, who else? It does not matter your level of credence or your level of the integrity or the level of the decorum that you might have respectability to bring. No, it doesn't matter to Trump. So any other person would have fitted that just to tick a box to say, Trump wants attention and you just need to give him attention or show him that you give him attention. But chances are we are gone as a AGOA beneficiary, despite the current suspensions. It has always been coming, even before the Trump administration, the second Trump administration, with AGOA was always out there. So it means South Africa ought to have long ago made plans to ensure that they mitigate this type of situation that we are finding ourselves.
So yet we can't wish Trump away. We stuck with this guy for 4 years, right?
Yeah. Certainly, we are stuck with him for four years. And as
and could be more.
Heard him comment, yes, as we heard him comment, he's actually wishing for more. So, yeah. So we are stuck with Trump for Kamala. And we might very well be stuck with a Trump acolyte also after Trump. It could be that Vance or somebody else fills in the shoes, because they've known how to win. They've known how to jeopardize the system. It will take a lot of reckoning by American voters to change the status quo.
Should South Africa be worried?
Yes, we need to be worried. We need to be worried, at least in the short term. And if there hasn't been any plans afoot to ensure that we plan accordingly as a country and make sure that from a trade perspective, we develop or cultivate newer markets, especially within the African continent, and to substitute the US, we may very well find it difficult to help our ailing economy. But as we know, the African markets may not be as lucrative as the US or European markets. So we should be prospecting for expansion of economic opportunities or market opportunities within the EU and Asia. Asia seems to be very much insular, and we should be doing a lot more to ensure that we enhance our trade, especially with Asian countries. But I'm glad that Trump did what he did, because this is long overdue, trying to upend the world order, and especially so far as multilateral institutions are concerned, because now he's basically flipping the WTO upside down and saying, we're not going to play by anybody's rules. We'll make the rules as we go, and we'll pick the ones that fit us. So what does that mean? There's chaos, but can we navigate our path in this chaos? That's a question that our president and his cabinet need to be able to answer or respond to.
But, you know, Asia, I mean, when you speak Asia, we primarily speak in China, right? Although they seem insular, some people will argue that they're not necessarily our friends. I mean, they have their own selfish ways of doing things.
And I'm glad you're raising that, because that's the point that we always say to our president, that national interest trump continental or global interest. Look first for what is good for your country, not what is good for your SADC, not what is good for Africa, because all those countries are also looking at their own interests. And you cannot blame China for looking after its own interests, because if people are unemployed, they don't care whether you're good friends with Zimbabwe or Nigeria or whomever. They want to be able to know that you are doing something that will benefit them, which is what the Chinese Communist Party was able to do by reversing the kind of poverty that they were faced with until the early 2000s, when they joined the World Trade Organization and made sure that they actually improved their economic prospects. So it is important to realize that national interest should come first. It is one thing to talk about Sub-Sahara, to talk about the South Sudan and all these other things, and being friends with Mnangagwa and all that. But at the end of the day, is being friendly with Zimbabwe, is being friendly with others of our neighbors going to benefit us? Chances are not to the extent that we could if we make sure that we put national interests first and then the less. Because unless we are in good, in fine fettle, or you are economically strong, you may not be able to service others. So you need to be able to look to improving yourself, making sure that you actually can deliver, and then you can have the means to which you can go and assist others. The same with peacekeeping missions. How, to what extent do they benefit us? These things that we ought to be, or are they just petty project, personal projects that we are advancing? I'm not saying they are, but I'm just saying we need to be looking at what do we need first. It pains me that we've got the resources, we've got the wherewithal, the skills, but we don't seem to be able to apply our minds to ensure that we get ourselves out of the current socioeconomic moral that we find ourselves. Every day we hear about kids being shot at adversities, or like today, or the sudden death of somebody in Walter Sisulu University. And you ask yourself, where's the rule of law? We don't have the rule of law. People walk in and out of the country as they please, you know. And we don't. So you need to be able to look internal to say what needs to be done to make sure that we fix ourselves to be able to compete with Trump. Like him or hate him, love him or hate him, Trump is doing what he believes is in the best interest of the U.S. And just says, shows the middle finger to everybody else. He says, I'll take everybody else to jail in El Salvador, and I'll apologize later to the Supreme Court justices. That's not what we prefer or wish to be done. But
yeah,
he becomes somebody who's single-minded. Say, I want to solve this problem, then I'll go and solve it, and then you can fix later. Our problem is indecisiveness, especially by the president, who seems to take long to make decisions.
Well, yes, and he gets shocked very easily. But, you know, on the issue of the current tariff wars and the fact that we are good with China, we are buddy-buddy, personally, I think at least we'll start buying Louis Vuitton bags for 1,000 rand, not $38,000. So no, that could be good for us.
Everybody should afford a Louis.
Without the logo, though, but we still get the bag.
Yeah.
So I asked I continue.
Yes. Yeah. No, carry on.
I was saying, I asked you earlier if you know, the president should not withdraw Jonas, and he said he shouldn't. Now I'm going to ask you a different question, or the flip question. Should Jonas continue to take this job? I mean, look, we know he doesn't need the job. He doesn't even need the money. I'm sure he already makes 600 million in his boards and interests. I mean, like, why bother?
Well, he has, he's a man of honor. He has accepted it. And we expect that to the extent that he has accepted it, he must live through it. There is, however, no guarantee that he'll be welcomed in Washington.
Yes.
So,
he may not get a visa.
He may not get a visa. You know, Rubio might just decide, no, sorry, you know, you are anti us, and therefore.
Exactly.
And you are not even a diplomat; you are just an envoy. You know, your credentials haven't been.
They don't match. Accepted. So you're not coming in here.
They don't match. So it would be folly of him to now turn back and rescind or renege on his word. And I believe, as a man of integrity, you would see through that he doesn't. Obviously, there's that risk, as we alluded to earlier, that he might find, he might likely find. Met with hostility in Washington, and he might very well find it difficult to navigate and lead. But one thing that I think the president is doing is to ensure that we keep Trump in the radar, just to make sure that we give him that appeasement that we do care or seem to care about him, and not just later. Because even if you don't appoint an envoy now, you know, which is a temporary position, question abound as to whether the U.S. would look kindly to us sending through a permanent ambassador there, because that is still dice, because given the current situation, it might very well be that they don't play ball and just make it difficult for us to actually get an ambassador settled in the capital.
Well, in fact, let's say, you know, he plays ball and, you know, one day we're going to send somebody. But who do we send now? I mean, we can't even trust Ridley. She's already rubbing Trump up the wrong way.
Yeah.
Who do we send?
I think we she did a good interview the other time when she appeared before Congress. You know,
and yes, yes.
She did a spirited, a job. But the point is, you know, as you rightly ask, who do we send? There's a hell lot of contestation, on that question, because especially now, given the fact that we've got a government of national unity, although you hear people saying, yeah, the president has got there, we accept that the president has got prerogative, but we do know that the likes of the DA have their own preferences, and their preferences, it's not a Jonas, Quincy Jonas. It's not a, you know, a Caesar Kumalo or whatever.
Yeah.
They prefer somebody of their ilk. And we do know that that person of that ilk would likely be somebody in corporate or ex-corporate, especially multinationals, who is white, who may be a darling of white capital. And therefore, that may very well be a recipe for disaster, because it might very well be that we've got our foreign policy dictates being commanded elsewhere other than Mahab Mandvov. And we need to guard against that. Much as we appreciate that there is a government of national unity, the president ought to make sure that and by the way, work still goes on, even without the ambassador.
Mm.
Obviously not to the extent that it could with had we had an ambassador, but it must very well be accepted that there's a risk that even if we send an ambassador or we nominate an ambassador now, they may just as well not cut it insofar as the other party is concerned. And it would be folly of us to appoint somebody just to appease Trump, just like Trump didn't appease us when he sent in.
But the difference is, the difference is, if he's not appeased, then we're not getting the visa. So that person is not going to go to the US.
Yeah, I don't want to invoke the Robert Mugabe mantra, he can keep his US, we can keep our South Africa. Because that would be harakiri.
Yeah.
But there comes a point where you have to invoke Yakaolo Motswana, this will resonate with you. We must have that pride in who we are and not want to be pulled around on our nose because on somebody else's whims. So in other words, what I'm basically saying is that it might very well be that if Trump chooses or so chooses not to reciprocate and accept an ambassador, the president choose to do so, it will be, something that is, we cannot help it. We cannot force them. Unfortunately, I'm not sure if the Vienna protocols or whatever protocols do come in, or the UN Charter protocols come in insofar as that aspect is concerned. But the fact of the matter is that we cannot accept it. And we do know that theirs is not based on logic. It's not based on rationality. It is based on somebody else's whims.
Hasn't the time arrived, though? And if you remove Trump from the picture and we go back to the US before him, hasn't time arrived for us to, especially for missions like this, consider career diplomats? I think that we've placed so much emphasis on political appointments in these jobs than career diplomats. And sometimes that's why we end up where we end up.
Yeah, I'm not sure if I subscribe to that notion. I know that it's mainly painted that we need to have career diplomats. But at the level of ambassador, it is often the case that the president would select someone who may not necessarily come from the career diplomats corps, but somebody who would be able to advance a party political agenda and a country's agenda, to the host nation. And that person would be supported by what you then refer to as career diplomats, people who do the actual work, who knows who the movers and shakers, who know where the balls are and the screws are and what moves in the town. So that is a kind of focus that we should be. The question is, do we have those individuals in the missions that we send out? If the answer is no, then we should be looking at ensuring that indeed those positions are filled by career diplomats. But to the extent that here we're talking at that level, I'm not sure if the US designated ambassador to South Africa is a career diplomat themselves. No, I don't think so. The ones that Trump sends to France.
No, that's what I'm saying. If you minus Trump, historically, these guys have sent career diplomats. Trump sends not even party loyalists, he sends Trump loyalists.
Daughters in law.
Exactly, right? He's special, this guy. But, okay, let's not get carried away. So, on reflection, is this a crisis or just a circus made big by media, AfriForum, the haters of the ANC itself with its faux pas.
To use your words, it is a circuit. It is a circus wrapped into a crisis, served on a platter of anxiety that we all breathe through. And unfortunately, it has no end, or the end doesn't seem to be near for as long, for at least for the next 4 years, and unless something gives, which I don't see happening. It is a crisis. It is a major crisis. And I don't think it's a kind of crisis that I would even equate to what we're faced with during COVID, to the extent that in this one, we are still free to move around. But we know that there may just be a day when you look at the markets, they're all crashed and all your savings in your retirement pensions have been whittled, you know, to zero, which will create a global pandemic or you know, economic pandemic, if I may use that term. Mm. And therefore, we have to be able to be sensible and support those who seek to be able to approach this crisis very judiciously and with all the intellect and that they can master and decorum. Unfortunately, even if it means that it is not quieted on the other end, and it is a crisis. No, I mean, the last time we saw the market do the, what they did, especially in the NASDAQ and so forth, was only during COVID. But now we're dealing the predictability is even worse now, because today there will be tariffs, tomorrow there are no tariffs. The next day there's triple times the tariff, no, tomorrow is minus the tariffs. And then you also now have a lot of skullduggery. You've got a lot of venal people trading shares inside of, you know, trading. And the only nation that once was the beacon, a beacon of integrity and ethical business conduct, if I may use that term, seems to be the one now at the forefront of doing all the right, the wrong things insofar as commerce and trade is concerned. So who do we look to? There are very few, if any. I don't see any out there who will be able to rise up above the parapet and hold the moral high ground, because everybody is now looking for themselves and saying, what will be next and how do I make sure that I protect myself? So what this has actually just set out is just to open our eyes to say, gone are those days where we think other people have our interests at heart. We must make sure that we do things for our own and what matters for us, and not to be able to appease others, no matter whether it's China, whether it's BRICS, whether it's the US or the EU. It must be a case of what is in it for us. And that should be what permeates through the fabric of our foreign policy doctrine.
So I'm going to paraphrase. We should not do it because it's interesting to the public. We must do it in the public's interest.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, and that unfortunately, we seemed not to have grasped very clearly. You know, Mandela may not have articulated it so eloquently or clearly, but when he said to President Clinton, you can go and jump, he meant to say, what matters to South Africa comes first before your wishes. Yeah. So are we able to, we have the kind of leaders who can stand up to Russia's Putin or China's Xi, or Brazil's Lula, and many others. You know, the closest we've come was when our president told the US, or Trump, not directly in his State of the Nation address, that we will not be bullied.
Yeah.
But, you know, do we see that in action? I'm not sure. But that's a kind of thing, but that must be met with action. That we should be seeing that should be translated to more engagements with the likes of Central African Republics and others, and say, let us set up factories to beneficiate your minerals. Let us expand your chrome, your scarce earth minerals to make sure that we start production locally, putting whatever little sand that you have. But unfortunately, there's more lip service than actually, you know. And one thing that we always see our politicians talk about is they want unity. Unity is ephemeral. Unity is elusive. Unity, you can never, the continental, you can't even get party unity within the ANC.
Yeah.
So this thing of saying let's all walk in tandem, we can't walk in tandem, you know, national interest, Trump, continental or global interest.
Twice he's used that line and twice it has the name Trump on it. Devokas, always wonderful talking to you, my brother, chairman of Public Interest South Africa.
No, thank you so much, you know, Rams, for having me. I mean, I would have really wished to have been with you in, you know, to absorbing the energy in person. But I'm glad that you're able to make a plan given the circumstances. But once again, thank you so much for having me.